Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
It is March the 18th, 2019. Good evening, everybody, here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual at this time, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, bitches?
And the line in the sand, Andrew Balazs. How was everybody's weekend? Tony, as a bartender, how was your St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, man. I'm still tired.
I would imagine a lot of green beer.
Yeah, my favorite
and yellow beer.
Pretty green.
Any specialty shots for the occasion? I know you're used to, I know you usually do, like, specialty cocktails for big events and stuff.
Yeah, I'm a mixologist, okay? So I don't do specialty shots. Weird.
Tell people what the fuck you made, Tony. Jesus Christ.
All I did was revamp a drink called a Scooby Snack and put green sprinkles on it. Irish car bombs were ordered a lot. I had a very, very large number of Jameson bottles that we went through. Altogether, it was a good event, one of the better ones that I've been a part of because there's been some doozies. It was a fun weekend.
Andrew, as a non-bartender but perhaps participant in the St. Patrick's Day shenanigans, how was your weekend?
Oh, I'm a very active participant in all things alcohol and drinking. So, yeah, it was fine. I don't know. I was tired this weekend, much like Tony, but different reasons. And now I'm okay. I'm okay. I feel loose. I feel looser than the chick that Tony fisted this weekend.
Ew. She must have been green because that's all I have on my fingers.
Well, see, the thing is, you have kind of small hands but a huge dick, so it weighs itself out.
Yeah. Just like Trump.
Hey, it works in your favor, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. He is a huge dick. My bad.
We're apparently working blue and political tonight on the show.
We're 5 minutes in. We're already more entertaining than Raw was tonight.
Yeah, it was kind of
wow.
A basic bitch episode of Raw. It had its moments, but by and large, very disinteresting on the overall perspective. Let's actually touch on a couple of pieces of news before we get to the Raw review. The first one is that AJ Styles has re-upped with the WWE. No word on the length of the contract, but Styles himself has confirmed that he has signed an extension with the company, rumored to be 3 years. Tony, what are your thoughts on 3 more years of AJ in the WWE? Not that AJ.
Yeah, sure, cool. I'm happy for him. I'm glad that he settled on a number that was agreeable.
Andrew, same question. What are your thoughts on AJ re-signing with the company?
That I'll enjoy him wherever he goes, for I have. Literally, I think I've watched almost everything he's ever done because was a WCW guy. Then I was a TNA guy. We know I like New Japan, and I was in WWE. So, I don't know. When it comes down to it, do we ever really know how long these fucking contracts are? Ronda Rousey signed like a 2 or 3 year contract. Now she might be leaving. Brock Lesnar's on this weird contract that nobody knows anything about. So he could be leaving. He might not be leaving. He might get paid per appearance. Who knows? Before Jam in the Sand, after Jam in the Sand, trademark Chris Platt. I don't know. But, you know, it's just whatever. Like, if he keeps showing up on TV, it's a good time.
As long as he's comfortable still being on the road and doing what he does here, I'm okay with it here. When it comes to situations like this, especially at a more advanced age as AJ is getting, and I say that as somebody who's younger than AJ, but not by a lot, I could understand the appeal of wanting to get off the road with the career that he's already had. Because I feel like there would be a market for him to be able to do the signing circuit and stuff, to go make appearances and stuff, and not have to put his body through what a traditional active wrestler goes through on a weekly, monthly basis. That said, as a fan of his work, I'm more than happy to continue to watch him put on performance after performance. Two people who may be leaving the WWE, however, are Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. Andrew, as the New Japan guy, would you be okay with Anderson and Gallows going back to Japan here? And if so, what would you do with them?
The same thing they do with every guy, Jin. Just throw them in Bullet Club. No, I'm kidding. But, I mean, it would make complete sense for them to go back to Bullet Club. They haven't really done anything in WWE. So it is kind of what it is with them. Like, Carl Anderson's a well-traveled tag team specialist because he also had the tag team with Giant Bernard before Luke Gallows came over there. So Anderson's always probably got a spot in New Japan. If he brings Gallows, he brings Gallows. But they'll be fine. Like, they just kind of got lost in the shuffle in the last couple of years they've been in WWE.
Tony, any thoughts on the end of the run for Anderson, potential end of the run, excuse me, for Anderson and Gallows in the WWE?
Okay, bye.
The run never really lived up to its potential. They got off to a hot start coming in and attacking the Dudleys on their first night back in the company. But after the brief run with AJ Styles where they were beating up John Cena, nothing ever really materialized that kept them on television on a consistent basis. And one of the creative outlets that they had that they really enjoyed doing, the Botch Club that was on the network and posted on the WWE's YouTube page, got canceled after only one episode. So I can understand why they want to explore opportunities elsewhere, because the WWE runs haven't been what they would hope and they would be. All right, I am going to 110% butcher this lady's last name, and I'm going to apologize in advance for doing so. The Warrior Award has been announced for this year, and Tony, they finally got the fucking award correct. It's a behind-the-scenes person named Sue. Hold on, I gotta find it. I just had it. God damn it. If one of you guys knows the name, feel free to chime in and save me here, because it would be appreciated.
I'd rather watch you flounder.
Thanks, Dick.
I prefer the floundering, but isn't it something like Aitchison?
Aitchison works for me. It's as close as I'm going to get to it here. Tony, what are your thoughts on them finally using the Warrior Award for what Warrior intended it to be used for?
You ask a lot of questions that I don't care about. I have very minimal thoughts. Sure. Congrats. I mean, it's no different than the Hall of Fame itself, so.
Well, it's the rumored format tease happens, and I may be asking a lot more of these questions. Going to make for a long 2 hours. Andrew?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Tony. I'm not going to be much more help. Like, the entire Hall of Fame is basically a giant participation award. There's no actual criteria. McMahon votes in whoever he wants to vote in. He checks a couple boxes that are necessary. And then everybody complains like it's a legitimate thing or wants to talk about it like there's actually a talking point, which there isn't. McMahon picked somebody. Huzzah. The peasants rejoice.
Okay, given the fact that this news segment has gone nowhere, I'm going to go ahead and move on and get to tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Speaking of going nowhere, Brock Lesnar opens the show with Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman says that Seth Rollins pointed out that he has a stylistic advantage against Brock Lesnar, pointing out that Lesnar's had trouble with everybody that is of Rollins's size / moveset / abilities. Heyman is quick to point out that while Brock may have had trouble with those people, AJ Styles defeated, Daniel Bryan defeated, Finn Balor defeated, Seth Rollins going to be defeated at the hands of Brock Lesnar. Heyman says that he questions why Seth Rollins would take a match with Drew McIntyre tonight, to which McIntyre comes out and thanks Heyman for finally giving McIntyre some respect around here. Seth Rollins shows up and beats the shit out of McIntyre with a chair, tries to get into the ring to confront Lesnar, but Lesnar skips to his loo and steps out of the ring, leaving Rollins in the ring, Lesnar heading up the ramp chuckling, and McIntyre somehow miraculously disappearing in the interim. Tony, you know, we usually complain about the length of the opening segments on Raw. They managed to keep this one to a concise 10 minutes. What did you think of the opening for tonight's show?
Do you guys remember E-Feds?
Yes.
Yeah, well, for those that don't, you know, you would pit people online, they'd pick a character, whether it be created or representative of an actual one, and they would, like, do promos back and forth, and then the person who ran the E-Fed would type out an entire show, choose who won, and blah, blah, blah. I felt like the entirety of Raw, starting with Heyman himself, was like someone just created an E-Fed for WWE Raw. Never, or maybe not never, but it's been a long time since I've felt that every single promo that happened on one episode essentially said nothing with so many words. This was Heyman's retort to Seth Rollins, who was previously responding to Heyman, who was previously responding to Seth. It's like week three of the E-Fed before the pay-per-view happens, which would usually be a compliment to an E-Fed, but this is definitely an insult to the writers of WWE Raw. You are similar to a bunch of pimple-faced teenagers trying to recreate the stuff that they love, which is to say, it's just boring. Heyman said nothing. He's great on the mic. He's a great performer, a great orator, but he ultimately said nothing. And then you have the Seth and Drew moment where Seth, like, destroyed Drew McIntyre with a chair with, like, 20 shots to the back. And then an hour and a half later, I see Drew just perfectly okay, chilling, like, about to cut a promo that is similar to what I said earlier in that it had a lot of passion and drive, but really felt like just E-Fed style, which is just lacking any actual passion. And I know this particular promo is going to get a little bit of a divisive nature on our show because I venture to say at least one of us will really, really enjoy what he did. But I just don't, there's, in my opinion, and maybe we'll get to that later, there wasn't a lot of reasoning behind it. So back to the opening, it was the beginning of a show that I just continuously rolled my eyes at. And that's really unfortunate because WrestleMania is less than 3 weeks away. I should be pumped.
Andrew, what did you make of our opening segment?
Yeah, even though it was technically a shorter speaking segment than we usually get, it just felt long. And it could be because of what Tony was saying, where a lot of nothing was said. But you can make the argument that every time Tony decides to put a coat on his microphone, then, you know, that's what the fuck is going on with on the background noise.
That's not me. I'm totally still.
Harry,
my microphone was
you putting
muted,
a coat
so
on your microphone?
Me. My microphone was muted because I was getting a drink.
Weird.
I don't know what it was.
Greg, are you on the show? Where are you at, Greg?
Someone's hacking. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's Russia.
For the rest
anyway,
of
though.
See,
I was
going to
make a
make
Russia
fun
joke,
of Trump
but you
once.
Beat me to it.
Jesus.
I mean, it's
you
all because you brought
this.
Us e-feds. Now they're getting offended and they're going to hack us now. We're going to get, like, docked, swatted or some shit,
yeah,
like we're
not,
on Twitch.
Yeah,
I'm not making
it's not
fun
like
of them either because I was
to
heavy
do.
Into it. Like, I was in it, y'all. Like, in it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me because it's a lot of writing, and that seems like that would have been something you were really, really into when you were younger. You'd be like, no, I can write this better. Watch. It's being cool.
Watch me.
And then it's going to get played out on SmackDown versus Raw 08 or whatever the fuck game we had at the time.
Fucking Here Comes the Pain.
Okay, that's what you used. All right, I was just saying.
Let's not knock Here Comes the Pain.
Sure.
That game was dope.
I mean, it wasn't a bad game. But no, like, it was what it was, the chair edition for, you know, Seth Rollins getting angry and then just beating the holy hell out of McIntyre worked, sort of, but the fact that then later on, since Tony already alluded to it, McIntyre comes out and talks for like a good 5 minutes and Seth decides to jump on the camera first to cut a promo before running out when you just earlier in the day ran out and beat the shit out of the guy as soon as you saw him, essentially. Continuity issue. So, that's annoying, but, like, it's how Raw opens, so it is what it is.
Well, at least they didn't start the match in the ring with a hammer lock and a collar and elbow tie-up. At least they got into it in a brawl on the floor to go into the match. You know what? Fuck it.
Sure.
We're there. We might as well do it. The main event of the show is Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre, as mentioned. And McIntyre picks up the win at, as I scroll to the bottom of Larry's report, 14 minutes and 10 seconds when Brock Lesnar's music hits and he arrives inside of the arena to distract Seth Rollins. A claymore by McIntyre puts down Rollins for the pinfall. Before the match, McIntyre officially lays out the WrestleMania challenge to Roman Reigns that we speculated on this very show last week. Two-part question, Andrew. One, what did you think of the match? Two, what are your opinions on McIntyre and Reigns at WrestleMania now that it's official?
What do you mean? I think I went over my opinion of it last week. Like, it's Drew. It's Drew McIntyre. End of the Samoan sex machine. How can you hate the fact that the two beefy, manly men are going to just fight each other at WrestleMania? It's going to be good. The Scottish psychopath, even though I'm very, very sick of everybody being a psychopath. Like, it's like they have a new fucking word, and it's just irritating. Very, very irritating that everybody's crazy or is psycho. Come on.
Or lunatic.
You know what I mean. Like, it's like somebody just decided to pick one word and then they decided to use a thesaurus. All right, he's a lunatic and you got the psycho killer. Yeah, okay, we're going to use that occasionally. Psychopath. What else can we use here? Well, he's just a crazy, dangerous man. No, fuck you, idiots. But either way, it's going to be a good match. I like the way that it was phrased and framed by McIntyre. So that was okay. It was a lot of just rehashing what we already knew, so this did feel like a filler episode in a sense, but the punchline was at least something different. And the match was actually pretty solid for what we saw on TV, and we all had to assume there was going to be some kind of shenanigans at the end because you weren't going to have either one of them lose super clean when you're still building towards Mania in two of the bigger matches. So, yeah, that made 1,000% wrestling sense. The match was good. The promo was good. So I'm happy.
Tony?
Yeah, you know, you kind of have certain expectations with these two, and they hit, you know, those expectations. It almost felt like a main event, which, I mean, obviously it was the main event of Raw, but it had that feeling, that air of you know, main eventness. Still, it was also very just kind of paint by numbers. Everybody got their shit in, and, you know, Seth was sure to hit his suicide dive. I like the little things. You know, Drew just, you know, being able to deadlift into a suplex is pretty cool. Seth was able to do a few things that were fun to watch. So it was fine. And Brock Lesnar coming out. Realistically, the only complaint I have is one that we can have every single year that we've been a wrestling fan. And that's like, how can you continue as wrestlers to get so distracted by music and presence of a person far away that you know, end up getting your ass kicked and losing a match. So yeah, it was perfectly okay.
What are your thoughts on McIntyre and Reigns being made official for WrestleMania?
I'm just not that interested in Reigns. I never have been, you know, to begin with. And although I'm very happy that he's not being shoved down our throats anymore, this is going to be one of those matches on a seemingly over, you know, inflated card. Look, I'm not going to complain about a day-long WrestleMania because as a wrestling fan, I enjoy wrestling. But if there's not really a lot of reason to certain matches, then that's when it kind of becomes problematic. And the good thing is this kind of has a reason. I don't know. I could question Drew wanting to face Reigns after having already defeated him in the eyes of the fans and of himself. Like, you know, saying I took out Dean and I took out Reigns and now I'm taking out Seth, but you know, I kind of want to take out Reigns one more time. You know, it's kind of weird. His whole, you know, talk to your daughter and your wife and, you know, don't, it was weirdly worded. You can't demand a match and then say, you know, have your kid and your wife talk you out of it. I get what he was going for. I totally understand it. I just didn't like the delivery.
I thought that the main event match was pretty good, easily the best thing on tonight's episode of Raw as far as in-ring content. However, I think that McIntyre's challenge to Reigns came off a little bit flat. I think that if this was something that McIntyre would have done earlier in the show in order to fire up Seth Rollins and then cue the Rollins attack from behind like we saw at the start of the show, it would have made more theoretical sense to me. But as I said, the match itself was pretty good, so I can't really complain about the match. All right, going back to the start of the show now to pick up where we left off after our opening segment, Finn Balor has a mystery partner to take on Lashley and Lio Rush. Andrew, what's Meathead's opinion of Finn Balor's tag team partner?
Meathead.
Meathead? So do I have to play someone who's really just dumb and who wants to, like, I need to punch somebody and, like, play football? Or do you mean Meatwad? Like, were you talking Meatwad?
I don't watch a lot of Cartoon Network.
Well, this was Adult Swim, and this is 15 years ago. So
still didn't watch much Cartoon Network.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know, see, Leo didn't say much, really, like, nothing overly annoying. He hit a couple beats, and then the whole pose thing. I actually liked that beat he hit, and when he's like, yeah, show him your favorite pose or whatever, and it was just holding the belt up, and is like, you know, this is something Chicago hasn't seen in a while. Like, it was typical heel 101 garbage, but it was fine. It worked. So, it was what it was for the lead-in, and then the match was all right. You're dealing with a lot of people I really don't give a fuck about, so it's hard for me to get invested.
You did get to see Lio Rush get beaten up for a vast majority of the finish, though. I feel like that would have sat well with you.
Yeah, but it was also Braun Strowman just throwing people, and it's like, he's like the embodiment of that fucking SNL skit of we pick things up and put them down. Like, all he does is he picks things up or he throws them, and that's just, I'm big and I do angry big guy things.
So basically what you're saying is the fact that it was Leo getting abused was cool, but the fact that it was Braun doing it negated the coolness.
Exactly. Like, two negatives don't make a positive. But, you know, three rights make a left.
I'm kind of catching on here. Tony, your thoughts on the match, and then I have a little bit of a mini rant to go on about this contest. Not the participants thereof, but the commentaries era. Go ahead, Tony.
Bro, my review simply says, shut up, Cole. So So I'm on the same boat, man. The match itself was fine for an opener. It is fun to see Braun throw Leo around. However, this isn't the Braun of a year ago when everyone was on fire, when he was on fire and everyone loved it. This is the Braun who is in a feud with two hosts from Saturday Night Live, or two people from Saturday Night Live. So there wasn't any energy in the match because no one really cares. For instance, I've been giving praise to Lashley over the last couple of weeks because I feel like he's putting a little bit of fire into his matches. This isn't any different, really. I love, you know, he's just moving a lot faster now, and he has a little bit more personality in the ring. You know, flexing against Braun, he shouldn't be afraid of Braun. So I thought that was cool. Him being a little bit more crisp, moving a little faster, it's all nice to see. But realistically, similar to what Andrew said, he doesn't care about the people involved. That's a big problem. This is Finn Balor and Braun Strowman, who, you know, over the past year or about a year ago were big names and had a lot of fandom. And now we get to where they're at now. And what are we doing with them? What we got tonight was the possibility of Braun entering the Andre the Giant Battle Royal of, you know, super extra, you know, long titled names thing. And no one cares. Why would we care? And his reasoning behind it was even dumb. Like, I'm going to enter that so I can throw multiple people out. Like, well, yeah, duh, idiot.
It was an attempt at protecting the fact that they have nothing better for him than to throw him in the garbage battle royal. So I thought that was just funny that was their validation.
At least he's not teaming with a fucking 10-year-old again. Anyway, back to commentary here. So they've been teasing all week on the social media that it was going to be Finn Balor and a mystery partner taking on Lashley and Leo Rush. And right as we go to commercial, when Balor makes his entrance, we hear Michael Cole chime in from the commentary table. I bet Lashley and Leo are in for a monstrous surprise when we come back. You little cocksucker. Can we not let a moment happen organically anymore? Do you have to step on everything and prove that you're the smartest man in the room? What the fuck, Michael? Let it breathe. Let it happen. Let us react to it. Now I'm sitting here thinking about I wonder who Finn Balor's going to choose. I'm hearing rumors that Sammy might be coming back soon. I'm hearing rumors of this guy and that guy and this guy, and the NXT call-ups are still a possibility. He's teamed with Ricochet before, and Alistair's not there this week because he's on his honeymoon. Maybe he'll team with Ricochet again. They're in for a monstrous surprise. Get fucked. Sorry, mini rant. Okay, I'm good. I feel better. A Moment of Bliss is up next, and Alexa brings out Elias to let us know he is officially the musical guest at WrestleMania this year. He was supposed to be the musical guest at WrestleMania last year, and then they put the kibosh on that last minute and then changed it to him interacting with Cena before Cena had the match with Taker. No Way Jose's music hits. Again, Cole, shut the fuck up. And Heavy Machinery lead the conga line out during A Moment of Bliss. Well, if we weren't sure that they were Bushwhackers 2.0 before, we are now. Alexa scolds Otis Dozovich about the fact that they talked about this and they were supposed to come out at the end of A Moment of Bliss, not interrupting Elias. Elias is then jumped by the cheeseburger, who takes off his shirt and his Rey Mysterio mask to reveal that he is No Way Jose. Shocker. We come back, and they're in the middle of a match that Elias wins with Drift Away at 4 minutes and 10 seconds after almost slipping on the top rope, going for the Hail to the King elbow drop. Tony, I don't have a question. Just give me your thoughts here because I don't know where to begin with this.
So, Alexa Bliss comes out, the host of Mania, to introduce Cole to run down the WrestleMania card, which the crowd does not like. thought that was relatively stupid. And then brings out Elias and promises him that he won't get interrupted, only for them to get interrupted by No Way Jose's music and Michael Cole saying, "No way." Shut up, Cole. Heavy Machinery. I mean, when you look at the list of those people that they shotgunned up to Raw because they were afraid and they came out and promised that they'd listen to us and things were going to change and everything was going to be different, can you tell me what any of those, what are they, six people maybe, are doing right now? And is anything they're doing meaningful? Where's EC3? Where's Nikki Cross? Lacey Evans is literally walking out and then walking back. Like, that's it. Why? I don't understand.
I mean, other than Lacey Cause playing as Grandpa Simpson, that's pretty much the extent of what those six have done. Sullivan's MIA, EC3 is in main event purgatory, and Nikki Cross hasn't been on television since her and Becky Lynch had beef when SmackDown was in Europe.
So you got the Heavy Machine, who I don't particularly dislike or like. I'm completely apathetic, but it's just like, what did you bring these guys up for? Is this why? To dance in a conga line? And then you have the match, which realistically, they're doing it to keep Elias, you know, relevant and make sure he's on TV, but that's fine and everything. But even that was kind of annoying. You had, you know, eight jobbers outside chanting No Way Jose. Their job was to get the crowd invested. The crowd didn't give a shit at all. They weren't going to bite. They're not going to latch on to what you're doing here because it doesn't work, because they don't care. I don't care how many bright green dreads this dude puts in his hair or braids. It's just no one cares about him. And whose fault is that? When you look at Heavy Machinery and then you look at No Way Jose, I mean, maybe they had a talk in the back and they're like, "Hey, you came up with no direction. I came up here with no direction. Let's hang out in no direction."
Okay, before I let Andrew give his thoughts here, I will give credit to Renee. Renee actually made me chuckle with the line about No Way Jose, that he got his idea for his new hairdo by watching Naomi's Instagram story. That made me chuckle. Andrew, your thoughts on the other pile of shit that has gone on with No Way Jose and Elias these last 2 weeks?
Ooh, since we're referring to commentary a lot this week, I'm going to just say that, oddly enough, my thoughts mirrored that of Corey Graves, where I thought exactly the same thing. I'm just like, why? Why did he have to dress up like a fucking cheeseburger in his own conga line to attack Elias? Why? What was the point of that? He could have danced around. It's not like Elias attacked anybody. He just chose to get into Dozovich's face because that's who Alexa was kind of scolding. So what kind of advantage did dressing up like a cheeseburger and then attacking him in the same segment where they came out? So it's not like there was any kind of sneak attack. There was no ambush, really, or no ambush that the cheeseburger helped to, you know, set up. Like, it was fucking stupid. That was a reveal for the sake of fuck all. And Tony hit the nail on the head when it's like, no one gives a shit. That's the problem with a couple of the matches on the card today, was just that you threw in people that no one really cared about. The crowd was dead because you basically put three or four, I forget whatever it is, people in job matches. Like, it was fucking
apathy.
Stupid. Yeah, apathy is a nice one too, but it's hard to really understand what you're doing when you've got nothing for Elias. Like, you've literally been having him get interrupted for like a month and a half as his gimmick. Like, really? That's a gimmick now, to want to perform and then get interrupted. Then get mad you get interrupted, and then attack the people interrupting you, and then they attack you back? Like, there's some kind of validation of what? I don't get that. I don't really understand. No Way Jose was validated in that one. So, nothing. The setup made no sense. The match wasn't really entertaining. And whatever. At least Elias went over.
Tony, where can people read your complaining about... Where can people read your complaining about commentary in your Raw report?
Pornhub. Just search writer gets royally fucked and frustrated over wrestling product. No, 411mania.com.
/wrestling. Andrew, you'll be reviewing Raw long form, given your ratings and stuff, in addition to SmackDown Live, and where can people read that at later this week?
Depends on if I have an aneurysm after SmackDown. Like, I shouldn't. It's usually better, but if the commentary and everything is bad, you never know. I might not make it that far. But if I do, you could always find it on thechairshot.com.
I feel like Tom Phillips is a lot more digestible than Michael Cole is. Like, I can tolerate Tom a lot more than I can Cole.
Tom comes off more professional than Cole does. I don't know if it's just the delivery or the tone, but he comes off like just, you know, classic play-by-play.
I think Tom comes off as more of a wrestling fan than Cole does. Like, Cole treats it as a business. Phillips is more of a fan.
That's a fair way to put it.
It's not this saying that it's treating it like a business is a bad thing, but when you're lacking passion in the product, you can definitely tell that from a fan perspective. And when you can tell that your announcers aren't engaged, it causes you to get disengaged as a fan to an extent as well. Seems like the common thread of tonight is apathy. Speaking of apathetic, one of them their fancy Tony words, Kurt Angle's WrestleMania opponent reveal. Yikes.
Speaking of pathetic.
All right, Andrew, have at.
What's there for me to have? Wait, why me have at it? Like, it's Corbin. No one likes it. I think the worst part about this entire situation is the fact that WWE is fully aware and they're trying to spin it as Corbin just, you know, fanning the flames and feeding off of the dislike, when I don't think anybody really understands that it's not we don't like you because you're a heel. It's like the Nia Jax situation where it's, no, we're not booing you, or we're not making noise, and we're not upset when you're in, you know, high-profile matches because you're a heel and you're doing your job. No, we don't like you because you suck. And you're fucking killing the fucking situation. You're killing the match. You're killing our enjoyment because you're fucking awful. Baron Corbin sucks.
Available on ProWrestlingTees.com /TheChairShot.
Good show.
Hey, now I'm shilling. All right, Tony, go for it.
So this dumpster fire piece of shit. Listen, he is the Justin Watry of the WWE, wherein if he disappeared, no one would be bothered by it. In fact, his mere presence brings the quality of the show and site down. So much, in fact, that a higher quality wrestler and or writer is an unwilling participant on most weeks because of his presence. Now that double metaphor is gone, this is just sad. I mean, you could almost see Kurt Angle cry inside by saying, I choose Corbin as my very last opponent in wrestling. I don't know who would be the right person. I just know that this is definitely the wrong person. I feel like there's not let's look at it from a kayfabe perspective, wherein Kurt Angle is so upset about how much this guy has done to hurt his return to the WWE. What have you lost as of right now? Do you still want to be the GM? Because what we saw a few months ago was that the McMahons are now running the show yet once again. So you don't have a role to begin with. You don't have a role anyway. You're back from your little vacation. You're wrestling people that you want to wrestle. So what compels you to want to face Corbin, other than, oh, you've made my life a living hell? I don't know, because I've seen people do a lot worse to you, to your wife, to your gold medals, to your title, to, you know, a lot of things. So it just doesn't make sense from that perspective. And then you look at tonight's show and you get the announcement, and of course the crowd rightfully shits all over it. And then you see the opponent, the one who's going to get the very last match out of Kurt Angle, the guy who you are touting on live television to be one of the greatest of all time, will face someone that doesn't matter, that doesn't even have a full name anymore, in a match wherein he doesn't even get an introduction. He simply appears in the ring and then loses. I'm not saying he should have won. I'm not saying he should have even had a match. But what I'm saying is this is the guy that you want us to believe deserves to face Kurt Angle at WrestleMania in his very last match ever. Either A, you're fully aware and you are purposefully slapping us fans in the face, or you are just completely naive to the fact that heel heat isn't the same as what we call and deem X-Pac heat, which this guy has in leaps and bounds. You telling me that, you know, you're here to cash a check and blah, blah. He's been this person since NXT where he was putting down, you know, actual wrestlers. And that was fine. That made sense. But that's gone now. Now you have no significant role. You're a wrestler. You're nothing, and you're still coming out in a vest for some reasons, which we still have not gotten an explanation for. So there's nothing, it just, none of it makes sense, none of it is wanted, and all of it's very frustrating because I feel insulted as a fan, which I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one.
Take the fish.
Kurt Angle takes on Chad Gable tonight. And the only thought that I could have watching this match was, man, could you imagine what this match could have been like if Kurt could still go? Because Gable was bumping his ass off for Angle in order to get this to something passable. We've said many times on the show before that Gable might be one of the most underutilized talents in the WWE. I think this did nothing to disprove any semblance of that. Gable more than holds his own against Angle, and one could argue that he carried that match tonight here. Andrew, what were your opinions of Chad Gable's performance tonight in the match against Kurt Angle?
It was fine. Like, what else are we going to expect from those two? Like, they went through the pedigree of the fact that they're both amateur wrestlers. They both, you know, world class at different points in time. Like, it was what we kind of expected. Granted, it would have been nice to see Gable get the win. You know, that would have kind of been, you know, sat a little better with me instead of Angle basically winning all the way up to his, you know, time at Mania or whatever fuck happens with this. So that I didn't like a lot, but, you know, the match was fine. What else are you going to do? Granted, I wouldn't say Gable's underutilized, at least not lately. Like, he's been on TV in a prominent enough role for the last, what, 3-4 months? So, underutilized is kind of a strong word.
There
was plenty of people that were tag team specialists. Would you ever say that Legion of Doom was underutilized just because they were tag team specialists?
I would say the Legion of Doom is overutilized because they're one of the most overrated teams in wrestling history.
Uh-huh. Not the point, because that's obviously a difference of opinion, and we're not going to go there right now. But being a tag team specialist has absolutely nothing to do with utilization. What? Because they don't get 20 minutes in a match every week? Then suddenly that's not enough? Like, underrated and underutilized are really kind of irritating.
I'm saying that Gable is capable of so much more, and he proved it in NXT. And
everybody can't be in the main event.
I'm not saying he should be in the main event, but he'd be a perfect guy for that IC title level.
And he has to work his way up there, which is, see, it's one of those funny turns in logic where some people just like, well, we've seen this guy in NXT, so he should get shoved. And then when somebody gets shoved to a certain scene, then other people think, oh, well, he didn't quite serve it yet. We haven't seen him work his way up. This is fine. We've seen him in SmackDown. SmackDown kind of, that tag team division kind of fell apart. So then he came to Raw. Him and Rude put together a team that was probably a lot better than most people thought it was going to be. Because I know, at least on this show, we were assuming that they were just going to, you know, break apart after a couple weeks and start feuding, and that didn't happen. And they actually turned out to be an all right tag team together. And that's been going on for a few months. Like, he's been prominent. It's fine. It's a way to work up. It's not like he's going to be stuck to Bobby Roode for very long. Bobby Roode is just as old, if not older, than AJ Styles. I forget exactly when their birthdays land. So Roode isn't going to be around much longer. So Gable's probably getting groomed for better things. It'll happen.
Tony, what were your thoughts on Angle and Gable? And if you want to contribute towards the Gable overrated, underrated, overutilized, underutilized conversation, feel free.
Well, I feel like the match was one of those things where the emotion outweighed the criticalness of it. Angle was very obviously moving way slower than, you know, even what we've seen, you know, earlier this wrestling year. So it was kind of like, oh, man. Not like, oh, he sucks. It was like, damn, I bet this would have been amazing, you know, a few years ago. Even so, it was still a well-put-together match, and it was one of those, last we saw of Chad Gable, he was a heel teaming with Roode, and that was just last week. Now we see this, and he's wearing his red, white, and blue, and he tells Kurt, you're an inspiration, you're my idol. It was like this little moment in a vacuum. What bothers me the most is that when you juxtapose that with the announcement that Baron Corbin is the opponent at WrestleMania, it's like staring you in the face. Whoever wrote this show needs to look at the product and say, I've made a huge mistake. The raw emotion that you had in this match on its own was palpable. It was right there. It was tangible. It was something you could feel and see in every single move. The little callbacks, the moonsault off the top rope that was missed, that's totally Angle. You know, just the ankle lock that Gable had, the reversal into the German. Like, everything that they did was, like, so cool in that little moment. And that's what you want WrestleMania to be. So what we're going to do instead as writers is we're going to give him Chad Gable. We'll probably give him Shelton Benjamin next week. We'll give him someone cool that everybody would love to see the dream match. But at Mania, we're going to get that, you know, what I assume they feel is the money match. What they're thinking, their mindset is similar to Kofi and Bryan, where if you give them shit and you make them go through all of this, then they look better at the end when they win. They did the same thing at WrestleMania 30 when they Daniel Bryan faced Triple H and then won, and then afterwards got his ass beat, and then afterwards went to the main event to win. It was a feel-good moment. It really was. But do you really need to damage your face so much to overcome, quote-unquote, the odds? No, because what you end up doing is you end up creating characters like Baron Corbin who aren't disliked for the quality of their character but are disliked simply because they're not likable. And then you have the hero, Kurt Angle, in this particular situation, who has no reason to face Corbin. So instead, we're going to get these little mini dream matches that hold more weight at that moment than we're ever going to get at WrestleMania. Like, if I'm right and we see Shelton Benjamin next week versus Kurt Angle, you know, the commentary is going to blow it like it's the biggest dick in the world. But if you were to just mute them and watch what happens in the ring, you're going to see the emotion. And I don't know, for me, that's what draws me to wrestling. That's what makes me feel something, and that's what makes me want to watch the following week. The whole idea of Gable and Angle is something that everybody's been clamoring for and wanting, and we got it tonight. And I'm not saying that should have been the WrestleMania match, but I'm telling you right now, if that was announced, I wouldn't have been as disappointed as I am right now.
100% agree with your assessment there. Corbin's backstage putting over the fact that he's going to humble and embarrass Kurt Angle in his final match. Apollo Crews takes umbrage to this and challenges Corbin to a match later tonight. Corbin asks the Revival if they like him. Even the Revival say no, and the Revival just tried to go to AEW 2 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago. However many weeks ago it was. Later on in the show, go ahead and get to it right now since we're already there. Baron Corbin takes on Apollo Crews in a singles match, and Apollo Crews picks up a pinfall win over the man that Kurt Angle's facing at WrestleMania, clean as day with a roll-up and out of the end of days at 4 minutes and 22 seconds. Sometimes you just can't help but laugh at some of the shit. Nothing? Good. Okay, let's move on. Tony, it is women's tag team titles time. Sasha and Bayley come out to the ring to discuss that they're going to SmackDown tomorrow night to square off with the Iconic. They are then interrupted by Natalya and Beth Phoenix. Natty and Sasha get into a bit of a verbal spat, which leads to Beth and Bayley getting into a bit of a verbal spat, which leads to Sasha and Natalya getting into a physical spat. We come back from commercial, and it is Natalya versus Sasha in a singles match, which goes to a no contest because Nia and Tamina ruin fucking everything. Nia comes out onto the stage, cuts a promo. Tamina's down at ringside, shoving Beth into the ring post, super kicking Bayley and Sasha. All right, the Boston Hug versus Divas of Doom segment first. Tony, what did you think?
I mean, I'm all for Beth coming back if she wants to. I was never a big fan of hers. She just kind of existed in an era where women's wrestling just wasn't all that great. So, of course, she stood out, you know. Her reasoning for coming back didn't sit well with me, only because it seemed so fake. It was just, again, this was more of that writing that just didn't hold any weight. You know, I was sitting there, fully retired, chilling, and I come to the realization that there's one more thing that I want to do before I end my career, and that's win titles that just came into existence like 2 months ago. That doesn't make any sense to me. When you retire and you're like, there's that one thing that's itching. I never won the IC title. I never made event at WrestleMania. I never fought at, you know, MSG. Like, stuff like that, that makes sense. That's something where you're like, yeah, you know what? I can get behind that. But her saying, I never got to win the tag team title. Like, well, of course you didn't, dummy. They didn't exist. And now that they do, there's no weight behind those. There's no history. I mean, yeah, we could argue that, but realistically, there's no history to the titles that Sasha and Bayley hold. So how important are they to you in your retired career that you would have to come back and fight for them, hopefully? And then you just, Natty, just her, everything she does bothers me. One hand on the hip, smiling with cat ears, while Beth Phoenix is talking about returning from retiring. You know, I love Sasha and Bayley's little attitude. I mean, Sasha still sucks with delivery, man. But the attitude that they have is real. Like, it's kind of like what I said. Beth, you weren't exactly around at a time where women's wrestling was popping. So, I mean, get at me, bro. You know? But putting Natty in there, I know they're friends. I know they're like, you know, they got that little connection. But it's just like, I'm not interested. And then once you're already at that point, you have Nia Jax and Tamina coming down and just being – just everything she says is bothersome. And her little "see you at WrestleMania." I mean, does that mean that the match is on? Is this a triple threat? Is this a three tag teams? Is it more? What makes you think that you're going to WrestleMania? Was that said already? Was this something that was advertised? No. What it was you ad-libbing and doing something stupid and giving away the results of the card before they even have been written down. That's you, again, sucking so badly at your job. Nia Jax, what is your real name? Because I want to talk to her. Joe's cousin, Dwayne's whatever. Like, just fucking stop for a minute. Wow. It's possible for you to get better. It really is. I just don't think you have any interest in doing so. And that's what bothers me the most.
I think that's what we're just going to refer to her as on the show from now on. Just Joe's cousin. Andrew?
I don't know. It didn't. Nia's involvement didn't bother me as much as Tony, even though I'm not a fan of Nia.
Get off the show.
We all know that. Funny, but nah. It's like her little line of "see you at WrestleMania." Come on, give me a break. Everybody has been doing that. Literally, we have what I think 4 matches in the last week where people just point at a sign and say, "Let's do it there." That's Shane and Miz, point at a sign. Miz, you're not here right now, but we're going to finish it there. AJ and Randy, point at the sign. We're going to do it there. Landlord, rent, boom, that place. All right, fine. You know, Drew and Roman. Roman, you're not here, but I want to fight you there because that's obviously what we need to do. Okay, fine, it's done. Whatever. So she called her shot. It was probably what she was supposed to do because that's what everybody's fucking doing. They're kind of shirking a storyline build to, you know, the obvious crescendo of, all right, is it going to finish here, too? Let's just cut at the middleman, point at a sign, or just make a statement, and it's going to happen. So that's it's just the way WWE's doing it this year. And some people like it, some people don't. And I don't really think anybody thought the world was going to be set on fire by the Boss and Hug Connection versus the Iconics. So I don't know if we get that randomly on SmackDown tomorrow or within the next week or so. And then Mania is a triple threat. Maybe it's a four-way. I don't know. But whatever. They had to do something. Iconics versus Boss and Hug is not money. Beth coming back, I don't give a fuck about. Like, I didn't care about her when she was the watered-down China Glamazon, whatever the fuck that was. Sure, she kissed Kali and eliminated him. How clever. Not really. But, like, it's... Whatever. Like, anybody Natty is paired with, I immediately don't care about. It just so happens, Beth, I've never cared about. So I think I'd rather watch Tamina and Nia than Natty and Beth. Because at least Tamina looked a little better in this whole segment than everybody else, just appearing out of nowhere and hitting all right super kicks. Like, I wasn't offended by any of them. So there we go.
We'll have a replacement for Andrew next week, everybody. Don't worry.
You shit on LOD. You obviously don't know what you're talking about.
Overrated. Anyway. Moving on. Jinder Mahal managed to pull off the impossible. He made a Ricochet match uninteresting for a good portion of it. Ricochet does pick up the win at 6 minutes and 36 seconds with the 6:30 senton. But, Jesus, Jinder, 3 rest holds coming back from a commercial break? What the fuck, bro? Andrew, any thoughts on this match?
Ricochet is known as the one-dimensional high flyer so far in WWE. So, you keep him grounded. Sure, we look at it. Headlocks are rest holds, I suppose. But if you're thinking wrestling, you keep the guy grounded. And trying to cut off his air or something like that is also a logical way of doing things. Honestly, WWE is what's making Ricochet boring. Everything Ricochet does, we've seen him do. Except the difference is sometimes it's a Sasuke special, sometimes it's a space flying tiger drop, sometimes it's a Topic on Hio, sometimes it's a Topic on Kiro. But that's the only fucking difference that we've seen so far in Ricochet matches on the main roster is what flippy thing is he going to do for the dive? That's it. Only difference. So, I mean, I think they really need to start expanding and giving Ricochet a character. And we can't really blame this on Jinder because Jinder's a brawler. Ricochet's a high flyer. In any other company or any other program, if it was a brawler versus a high flyer, he keeps him grounded somehow, be it a headlock, an armbar, a you know, double wrist lock, some kind of takedown maneuver that gets it's a little boring to watch. Yes, but that's how you do it. So, yeah, the match was whatever. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't a great match. But you can't just, you know, blindly shit on Jinder just because he's Jinder.
I'm not blindly shitting on Jinder, but I'm also saying that if he'd had an actual psychological meaning behind his rest holds, then maybe I would understand them. Work the legs of a high flyer. If you're going to keep him grounded like that, keep him in a knee bar. Keep him in an ankle hook. Keep him in some kind of grapevine or something like that in order to
the
wear down the high flyer.
The neck. Colossus works the neck. It's a cobra clutch slam. So, of course, he's going to try to cut off your air, which also keeps someone grounded when they're gasping for breath. And if he's going to weaken up your neck or your shoulder area, it's because the finisher goes there. So there was psychological logic to it. But again, it's Jinder, so people just overlook it because it's boring.
I actually enjoyed Jinder's run on top here, but he's gotten significantly less interesting since he's found himself cascading back into the mid-card. Tony, what were your thoughts?
Well, yeah, because they give him no character, so nobody really knows what either of those two are doing. But if you think about it as leading towards a possible finish, his finisher is a cobra clutch slam. He worked the correct body part.
I'll admit that's fair enough. I didn't look at it from that perspective. Tony, what were your thoughts on this match?
Well, I'm going to blindly shit all over Jinder because he's boring.
I know. That line was purposely meant for you, not Harry.
Yeah, no, that was boring. And gender was 80% of the problem. Andrew's right in the reality that Ricochet is very, very quickly becoming, okay, you know when Seth does a suicide dive and we're all supposed to be very excited about it? I can't remember the last time I was excited about a suicide dive, period, because they're overused. Ricochet is amazing, and he's an amazing athlete. And you know why I enjoyed him so much when he was on the indie scene? Is because I saw him maybe once every 4 months. So it was crazy, everything I saw. It was new. It was fresh. He's going to be on TV every single week. There's only so many times I can see him pretend to be Iron Man before I'm like, what does that even mean? Like you flip at the same time that Aleister Black sits down cross-legged. Okay, sure, that's great. But, I mean, I don't get the point of it other than popping the crowd, which is a very integral part of wrestling. However, it will eventually get to a point where it's just not interesting. Adding a character to him, I don't know. The boy can't really talk, you know? But this is another issue with the NXT break call-ups where, I mean, at the very least, they're getting matches and they're shown on TV, you know? So I can't say it's a failure. They're doing really good things. They're doing really great, and I'm not bored of them yet. However, you can feel it, you know? I mean, am I right, Andrew? You could just feel it where you're like, well, I mean, come on, man. I already saw that flip. You know, I already, you know, there's no chemistry between these two anyway, so it didn't work out as a match. Eventually he'll get there. I don't think that he's going to be hurt. I don't think that he's going to fail or come off bad or people are actually going to get tired of him. But it's just so weird to see a debut so close to WrestleMania, and then you have moments like tonight where you want to put him out there. You want people to see him wrestle, but you don't really have a reason why. And who the hell, Aleister Black is a brooding character. I don't want to hear that he's conducting business anywhere. What does that mean? I don't want to hear that. He's like, what? If this is the IRS man and he's not on Raw, you say he was conducting business in whatever country or state. That makes sense. The dude's a tax guy. He's got some business to conduct. Aleister Black, at the very least, say he's like creating, fucking 5-star points in some hellhole trying to summon the devil or Dante's, you know, beast. Like, don't tell me he's conducting business.
Well, come on. It's supposed to be vague and leave it to your imagination because, you know, conducting business is kind of what the mafia would say. And we know he's dark. We know he's brooding.
Don't give Cole that much credit.
I'm not giving Cole the credit. I'm giving whoever fed him the line that much credit because he's dark and brooding. And even though they quoted the fourth rule from, you know, the Satan Bible last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, when Corey brought up the whole fucking, I think it was SmackDown, where Corey brought up that whole rule of, you know, people treat people who annoy you with cruelty and great vengeance or something like that. That's a line straight from Satanism. But they never acknowledge it directly. They always kind of wink and nod, and the fact that, you know, he's dark and got the fucking Cyrillic alphabet for, like, the way he comes up, at least in NXT. I don't know if it still does it in main roster. I haven't paid enough attention. But they're winking to it, but they're not throwing it out there. So they're not going to say, you know, he's sharpening pentagrams and sacrificing children to the devil. Like, I think that's a little too on the nose, buddy.
I think you just say that he's not there. You don't say conducting business. The dude was on his honeymoon. I mean, you're not going to say that either, you know, but conducting business just isn't the terminology that I would use to describe anything that Aleister Black is doing.
Perhaps.
To those who come across you with no anger or malice, let them continue on their path. For those that cross your path with anger and malice, you must destroy them. Or something along those lines.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're paraphrasing, obviously, but...
Speaking of anger and malice, Ronda Rousey takes on Dana Brooke for the Raw Women's title, and it's over.
That was actually a good segue.
25 seconds. title of your sex tape. Anyway, so, well, been watching too much Brooklyn Nine-Nine lately. Rhonda tries to throw the same kick that she threw at Dana last week. Dana smartly catches it, which shows that she studied that, and then dumbly slaps Rhonda in the face. Anything that happened after that, Dana probably deserved. Piss in the wind, tug on Superman's cape, slap Rhonda in the face. These are the things you don't do. Rhonda then proceeds to log Dana in the armbar, which she said we had to pay $60 for last week, but apparently not, because A, they informed her WWE Network was a thing, and B, she had a title defense tonight. And Dana taps at the aforementioned 25 seconds. Post-match, another official tries to come down and break up the armbar. Rhonda lets go and shoves said official on his ass, which will undoubtedly lead to another undisclosed fine. Security then tries to accost her while she's saying hi to her husband at ringside, so Travis Brown puts one of them on his ass with a forearm. Yay. Apathy. Man, if we did a one-word...
Can we talk about Nicholas's dad trying to toughen up against Rhonda? And you were fined with an undisclosed amount. Okay, buddy.
Yeah, that is the most fake line of the night, I think.
I didn't realize that was John Tone until you said that. Now that I do, it's even funnier. Do we have any comments on this particular match, guys? I mean, it kind of was what it needed to be, right?
I mean, I don't know why they're including the husband into it. I don't get it. I don't know why we need, you know, and this isn't some feminist rant, but I don't get why we need the burly husband to help out the already badass Ronda Rousey. And I definitely didn't need to see him lift her like she was nothing as the only person that could control Ronda Rousey. Like, I don't think his presence was really needed in this storyline that ultimately is, you know, already written, and I don't know what they're doing. They're trying to make her a heel, obviously, you know, and they're she's doing what she can, but I don't know. I thought it was unnecessary.
Yeah, it was unnecessary. You're right, but it didn't hurt anything. It is what it is. I mean, I'm more interested on if this is the way to write Dana Brooke off, like if she's going to be part of the spring cleaning kind of announcement after Mania. So, you know, Ronda Rousey went a little bit on the sexy star level, so her arm is really fucked up and then she gets released or something like that, maybe, because, like, they don't use her. So I could see that. There we go.
Okay.
Boom.
All right, before we continue with the show, fuck sexy star. Unprofessional piece of shit. Fuck her. Anyway.
I don't disagree. It was just the quickest analogy I could think of.
The last thing to discuss is Batista's sit-down interview with Michael Cole. And Batista's somehow coming off less interesting this week than he did last week. Which, considering how uninteresting he came off last week, is saying something. Give me what I want! I want a manipulator in a match at WrestleMania. Really? Go film Guardians 3 and be gone. Jesus. Tony?
I kind of alluded to this in the beginning of the show where I spoke of people cutting promos that ultimately said nothing, yet talked a very long time. Batista, you know, he's funny and he comes off very natural, but he was given a script that just didn't make a lot of sense. Saying he was held back and put down and, you know, being used as muscle, that makes sense and all that. But having this be the reason behind him wanting the match, I just thought they were going to come up with something just a little more creative. Not that I'm against we're getting the match. It's happening, you know, so you're either on or you're not. But it's obvious that they're not going to try to get you on if you're not. At least that's how I felt after this. Like, you're going to enjoy this or you're not. And this is just one of the 32 matches that we're going to have. So, you know.
Andrew.
I appreciated to a level how Batista tried to frame Hunter as the heel in the situation, the bad guy, whatever word you really want to kind of, you know, attach, when Cole kept defending him, and basically Batista's like, he's the cerebral assassin, he's the game. It's like, this is Stockholm Syndrome, shut the fuck up. So I'm like, actually, if he said that, that probably would have been funnier. But that's not the point. It's all right. And Tony's right on the fact that it doesn't look like it's trying to draw people in with any kind of big overarching emotional, you know, kind of thing to draw in whoever didn't know. But it also kind of falls in line with, you know, the last time Batista came back. Shit, Triple H brought back old lines he used then about, you know, find the animal, let's see if the animal's still there. He just didn't throw Sheamus at him this time. So it's kind of, it's a little rinse and repeat, but what are we going to do?
I'm not going to say I'm not looking forward to the match between Triple H and Batista, because usually Triple H's gaga matches, the matches such as the No Hold Bar, the stipulated matches, are where Triple H shines. And if Batista has any semblance of ability left from his original run with the company, then it should be an entertaining match. But it is about the least interesting way possible to get there, which is basically what you can say about tonight's episode of Raw in a nutshell. That wraps up this episode of Raw and takes us into our final reaction. Tony, favorite match or moment tonight?
I'm going to give it to Angle and Gable. The main event was solid, but it wasn't anything that we didn't expect. And I know Angle was super slow, but like I said earlier, it's more or less the emotion behind it that kind of was like, man, that's cool. It sucks that it's not at a time where Angle could, you know, move well, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
Andrew?
I'll give it to the main event. It was a decent match. I liked everything Drew said. Plus, Drew went over, so fuck, I'm happy.
I'm going to go with the main event as well. I do have a side note for the Angle and Gable match, but as far as overall enjoyment value, I got more out of the main event than I did out of Angle and Gable. Who's your Greg Watchery, Tony?
The decision to make Corbin the opponent of Kurt Angle. Cole is an honorary second, because Jesus.
Your honorary second is mine, so I'm just going to go ahead and announce that real quick here. Michael Cole can fuck right the fuck off with his commentary tonight. Every single thing Cole did tonight was annoying. I'd like to say he's better than that, but I'm not sure that he is. Andrew?
I mean, for Greg Watchery, I agree. It's probably Cole. Cole is my pick. But I was just going to say, I'm gonna call this the my own personal spin on it's going to be the Vince Russo Award, because I'm going to give that to the Angle Corbin thing because of how hard Corbin is pushing this whole, yeah, I'm his opponent. I'm going to be at WrestleMania. I'm going to do this. And the fact that he hit that point so hard so many times tonight, you know that there's going to be a swerve. I don't know if Angle's going to get him before Mania or squash him in like 20 seconds, and then we're going to get, I don't know, Cena to come out to fight him or something like that for a real retirement match, whatever. But you know it's going to be something, because they're just hitting that point too hard, too fast for 3 weeks build, and they hit it so many times tonight.
If any of us are going to do the Vince Russo accent on the show, it would be you, Andrew. What would that be?
Bro, okay, so you know Baron Corbin, like, people like him. I know they like him. Like, he's got that good heat. He's got that good look. He's a tall guy. Bro, like, you just know that the swerve is coming. Swerve is coming, but it's going to put him over big, bro. It's like that time when I put on the Lawrence Taylor jersey and the football helmet, bro, when I became champ, bro. It's going to be great, bro.
He sounds like that retarded kid that used to call us all the time.
Jesus.
Did you actually have one of them, or is that just a Kid Chris reference?
Yes, we did, and Jesus.
God damn, Tony, working stiff. Wow, okay. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
4. not my favorite episode of Raw, especially considering WrestleMania is so close.
Andrew?
Yeah, Raw was meh, but it's like it didn't bother me. So I guess, and the wrestling was decent, actually, aside from the matches that just kind of weren't, which is, you know, that's not really a great sentence because it makes no sense. But, like,
no,
you know, the matches that were given time were actually okay. And
so two
most of the matches
out of, like, eight?
three. The opening one, the angle one, and then the main event. Then we had, like, two squash-ish matches that didn't go anywhere. So those didn't even really count. And then, like, gender doesn't really, like, that was, like, that didn't bother me as much as it bothers you two. So I think that's part of the reason. But I'll give it a 5.5. We'll give it a 5.5. It wasn't great, obviously. I'm aware, like, nothing really happened. But, like, I'm not mad at the show.
I'm slightly lower than Andrew, but higher than Tony. I'm at a 5. It's kind of there, which is unfortunate to be saying 20 days out from WrestleMania, yet here we are. Tony, where can people find you online?
411mania.com. I'm also pretty active on the Facebook page that was created and nurtured by Harry until it removed itself from his teat and became a monster on its own.
WrestleMania discussion in full swing over at that Facebook page for the chair shot as well. Today we discussed the moniker of the new Mr. WrestleMania. I think I'm going to do one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the next 3 weeks building into WrestleMania just to give the discussion a little bit of chance to simmer so that way we can have some conversations to try to get some more activity back to the page that isn't just specifically site-related. Speaking of the site, Andrew, it's where people can find you, and that's where...
You can find me at thechairshot.com. It's completely Michael Nakazawa free, so don't you worry if you follow BTE.
It's Michael Nakazawa free for now.
Hey, you know, BTE is drug free, and the chair shot of me are Michael Nakazawa free. So, boom.
I'm over at thechairshot.com as well. My progress reviews are going steadily. The first 3 chapters are up. The next 2 are in the queue. I have the 6th chapter getting worked on probably tomorrow, since I'm not going to have time this weekend with Christine in town from Wednesday until Friday. So I'm going to try to work on chapter 6 tomorrow. In addition, if you guys are interested, over on the W2M Network, we will be doing a special edition of the kickoff we're calling the Tip-Off, which will be a NCAA tournament preview episode where we give you guys our thoughts on who got screwed by not making the tournament, who we think would pull the biggest upset in the first round of each respective region, and we play out our brackets from the Sweet 16 all the way to the championship game on the Tip-Off over on the W2M Network as well. HEB the Eagle on Twitter for me. IWC War Chief for Andrew, I believe it is.
Correct.
And Tony has TonyAcero.com because I guess he doesn't Twitter as much as we do.
Oh, I Twitter a lot.
Yeah,
not that kind of
Twitter.
You
Twitter.
Yep. Andrew likes a lot of my tweets. It's porn or wrestling.
Two things I like a lot, can I say?
Oh, my God, did you see her new picture?
I figure what better way for us to close out here. For the line in the sand, Andrew Velaz, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. We'll talk to you guys again next Monday night with the penultimate episode of Raw before WrestleMania. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you then. Tony, send us home.
Man, I can't wait to ruin some girl's life in Jersey. Deuces, bitches.
technical difficulty, screw it. You have been listening to The Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as Harry Brothers, Tony Acero, and Andrew Velaz bring you The Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chair Shot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week.